Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. We are here today. Y'all gonna get this podcast. I'm going to move from the right side of the couch to the left side of the couch. Y'all going to get this podcast.
Well done. Well done. You are indeed getting this podcast. It is officially 12 on the East Coast right now. So I guess technically Saturday morning. We just watched an exhilarating game of basketball. The Golden State Warriors have tied up the series. A 107-97 victory over the Boston Celtics in Boston, with crowd chants and everything else going on surrounding that game. Stephen Curry is absolutely amazing. We are blessed to watch that man play basketball. He set the tone early with 12 points in the first quarter, but just the shots that he made, the shot making was insane. Deep shot after deep shot, after pull up, after drive, after tough layup, after pull up, after relocation, after deep shot. Boston, I feel like Boston defended him mostly well in this game, and it just didn't matter.
And that's the point. That's the Steph Curry problem. He has such a different skill set that it doesn't matter. Like, look at all that Boston tried to do. We saw them go from drop to switch to even two on the ball late in the game. I saw in between games, there's kind of a talk of like, hey, this is what Boston wants Curry to do. They want him to take those pull-ups. They want him to work. And I get it, but he can make the shots that makes whatever you think you can live with unlivable. And tonight, I thought he displayed that. Continue, Nikias, my bad.
Oh, no. I just want to start with Steph Curry before we got into the nitty gritty of whatever we just watched in this game for. Because I think the common theme that we had towards the end of the watch party we hosted for this game and talking a little bit before we started the recording was, what does this mean? Like, obviously, it has serious implications. It's a 2-2 series. Golden State now has, in theory, two chances to win, to get this done, to get home court back. So obviously, it matters there. Boston had a chance to put a stranglehold in this one to go 3-1. They could not close the deal in the second half. But in terms of the on-court play shifting the other team's adjustment, like, did Golden State do anything that Boston has to look at the film and say, okay, we have to switch our coverage. We need to switch our rotations. We need to switch this matchup. Was there anything Golden State did offensively? Was there anything Golden State did that you think Boston needs to adjust to it heading into game five?
And that's the fun part of this series, is I don't know that it's either team is going to blink their way out of this. Someone's going to win this series, which seems like dumb analysis because someone's going to win the series, but they're going to have to take it based on what they do. You're going to have to do the things you need to do to win over and over again. Even when you look at the start of this game, Golden State makes the decision to go with Otto Porter in the starting line. That to me felt like an attack on Boston's too big lineup. Like, hey, we need to make Robert Williams pressure point again. We need to be able to have him in a different matchup, make him think, make him move, make him rotate. He found comfort with Looney. Let's see what we get there. Didn't work early. Boston was able to navigate it. Boston was able to hold pat. They were able to do well on both ends of the floor. And then weirdly enough, like, as Boston's big lineup beat Golden State's small lineup, Golden State's big lineup beat Boston's small lineup.
Yeah.
Which is the series in a nutshell.
It's like, what?
What, like, how, what's going on? So I don't, I guess the main one would be they have to find something they feel comfortable with Al Horford. Because it's very clear, we've seen enough games. Golden State is 1,000% fine with putting him in action against Steph Curry in multiple ways. Now, pick and roll is going to jump off the page. And we saw the drop. We saw him at the level. We saw him working. You know, this isn't Al Horford slander or shot session. It's just a pressure point that Boston hasn't had to deal with in this postseason, to where he has the good possessions where they screen, he's at the level, they rescreen, he's back at the level. That's tough to do. But there's also the moments where, you know, they come out at the start of the second half and it's a post split for Steph Curry with Wiggins as a screener to get Horford in it. And Horford's just nowhere to be found. And now they're searching. Even late in the game, it was like, okay, we'll switch this time. I just feel like there's there's more meat on the table, because I don't think Golden State has explored enough empty side pick and roll, empty corner pick and roll, those type of things with the way Curry's playing. And so I don't know if Boston has to blink, but there's still things they have to deal with. And that to me is the first one that jumps off the page.
Now, I am with you on that. And as you said, I said a little bit earlier, like it didn't even feel like Boston defended Steph poorly. He just kind of didn't think. 43 points, 10 rebounds for Steph Curry. Let's get the basic stat line out there. The fun stat for me, I had to look up before we got on. 48 on-ball picks, nor 40 pick and rolls for Steph Curry in this one. Highest number of the season. Highest number since game 5 of the 2017 NBA Finals. We have not seen this version of pick and roll heavy Steph in literally 5 years. That seems like a shift. And it bleeds into your point. They have found comfort in attacking Al Horford. Not that Horford's a bad defender. It's just, this is a coverage that we feel fine with. And Boston, you know, we've talked about the drop throughout the series so far. But for Boston, I think, not that you live with Steph Curry, because you don't want to live with Steph Curry, obviously. But they trust Marcus Smart can navigate screens well enough. Derek White can navigate screens well enough. If they do downsize, we can be tight enough on switches and show help elsewhere enough to where, okay, these are Steph pull-ups and they're dangerous, but if Steph doesn't blow the top off, then we aren't really in rotation like that. Because aside from Steph, no one else is forcing our defense to scramble. Klay Thompson can knock down tough shots. Klay Thompson is making us send two to the ball, or pre-rotate early and open up things. Andrew Wiggins can knock down shots or can get to the basket, depending on what the matchup is. He's not drawing two to the ball or making us rotate early. Steph's the only guy that makes us do that. And so if we can take enough jabs with the drop and keep everyone else at bay, then process-wise, we're fine. I feel like that was what Boston's mindset was and why they've stuck to the drop. And they've made little tweaks like, hey, Al, you do need to play higher sometimes. Robert Williams, you know, going into game 3 and some game 4 as well, you may need to play it a little bit higher. But that's why we haven't seen them trap Steph super often. Like, they're not trying to open things up for the other Warriors, I feel like. But again, that's all kind of predicated on, okay, Steph can't blow the lid off. 43 points is blowing the lid off. And Steph running this much pick and roll is where it's like, okay, maybe we can't live with this the way that we were earlier in the series.
And no, I agree with your point. And just hearing what you say, my mind goes to the fact that even with what Curry has done and did in this game, Boston still didn't want to hit that button. They still didn't want to put two on the ball. Even though they switched Horford once late, I feel like it wasn't like a thing that they went to a bunch. That's interesting to me. When you ask, hey, is Boston going to blink? Is Boston going to move? Because I don't know if they do. They're going to make Golden State do this again. And even when Jordan Poole had it going early in this game, didn't change how they treated him. Even when Klay started to get it rolling, didn't change how they treated him. Also, can we not do the narrative of this is the Philadelphia 76ers and Steph Curry is playing the role of Allen Iverson? Andrew Wiggins literally had the most rebounds he's ever had in a game.
Period.
That's a contribution. He's a plus 20. Like Klay Thompson, 7 for 17, but he had also had 18 points. Like there were other people that contributed. Steph Curry was amazing. Don't get me wrong. But I don't know if we have to go there with the talk, with the chatter. I think it's interesting. Golden State wins a game that in theory wasn't necessarily their style. I keep going back to it, and I mentioned it in the watch party, 40 made field goals, 20 assists. That's not really Golden State basketball, but they won the game. How do you think Boston feels or reacts to that?
It's weird to say I think they may be okay, because to your point, like, I think they, it, this is the threshold, which is wild to me. And it's even wilder that Steph is good enough to hit it, honestly. But like, this is the threshold to where Boston's like, okay, maybe we, let's throw in a little bit more random switches just to kind of throw off the rhythm of Steph if we can. But like, this is the threshold. And, you know, Golden State wins. I don't think the defense was the problem for Boston. Again, wild as that sounds, with Steph going off the way that he did against a coverage that everyone has been yelling about, I don't think the defense is why they lost. The reason they lost is because they lost the plot on the other end. Or at the very least, Golden State moved the plot because the on-ball defense was a lot better. Boston wasn't able to get the same automatics in the half court that we saw them get in game three that helped them get the ball pinging around the perimeter. They tried to drive as aggressively as they did in game three. They just didn't have the same success. And that is a testament to what Golden State was able to do. They tightened up the screws on that end. And so if there's anything for Boston to be concerned about, it's, hey, the rim pressure is very important for us. It is cool that we know we can make Golden State blink a little bit if we get Steph in action, if we get Jordan Poole in action, but it can't get to the point to where this is all that we're doing and Golden State's able to load up against it. And if it doesn't work, then we look like fishes out of water. Because what it felt like in the second half, at least for Boston, is that once they kind of knew, okay, we can't get this as smoothly as we got it in game three, there were too many possessions where it's 18 on the clock, a three's going up. 17 on the clock, a wild drive's going up as a guy goes through a bunch of help and chucks up something. And now Golden State's getting loose in transition. So, like, they have to maintain this aggressiveness, but it felt like the purpose was kind of lost. It felt like they kind of lost the plot. They couldn't generate the same looks.
Well, I think the blend is just, it's a tightrope for Boston. That dribble penetration is a great bridge for them. It allows you to play random, allows you to play out of the flow. You have something you can go to with multiple guys. You can play out of it. It's a lot different when you're having to play in the half court, which is why I thought Golden State's offense showing up was key, because Boston had to take it out of the net and play. I thought they did a lot of positive things, but I don't know if they felt, to your point, I don't know if they had the same purpose that they had in some of their previous wins. Jason Tatum off ball was a great wrinkle last game, and they enhanced it, I felt like, as far as putting, whether it was Curry or Poole, having his man screen for Jason Tatum off ball, letting him curl attack and play out of it that way. When that became kind of the default, it kind of puts you in a pickle. We talked about after the last game how much Steph Curry was put in pick and roll, and you saw the stats about what he did in pick and roll or what he did against as a primary defender. Never felt that same way in this game. And I thought Golden State did a good job of working to keep the ball in front, being active, but also enhancing and keeping with that late help. The late help felt like it was back. I feel like their weak side defenders did a better job of being nuanced and saying, hey, I'm in help position, but we're ready for that kick, as opposed to the last game where those early kicks got them off balance. That was a big thing for me. It just didn't feel like Boston had that same quick decision-making, that same quick attack, that same move to make Golden State react. Felt like Golden State was able to live a little bit more in the anticipating phase defensively, and that was a key deal. And if you take dribble penetration off the menu, or at least make it tougher, I'll put it that way, Boston now has to search. And when Boston's searching, you need the shot making. And you got it. Jaylen Brown had the mindset, but what was your final blow? And when you're in a fourth quarter game with Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors, your pressure point versus their pressure point, it becomes it's a punching match, the boxing match. And that's what I think I said that in the watch party. Whose is going to win right now? Because that what Boston brings to the table has a lot more oomph if they're up 4 or 5, as opposed to really going blow for blow. And I just don't know if they were able to hit those same pressure points despite having success. I mean, you had Marcus Smart going, making shots. You had Tatum not necessarily shooting the ball as well, but still a pressure point. Jaylen Brown was attacking. Where was the mindset? Could you keep the pressure on Golden State?
And ultimately, as we got late in the fourth quarter and the stats out there with how Golden State really blew it open the last, I think, 5:15 of the fourth, Boston couldn't keep up. Just in terms of the quality of looks, Golden State knew if we call Al Horford up, we're going to get something good. We may not always make the shot, but we're going to get something. We're going to get an open pull-up that we feel comfortable with from Steph Curry. If it's Jordan Poole, we'll get something comfortable. If Boston tries to pre-switch, we're going early enough to where we can now search out that matchup some more and still have time to get something. And if they sell out on the shot, we can get an offensive rebound now. Or maybe they open up something else with cuts and everything. Like, it's just felt like Golden State had a plan once he got lead. And Boston, they didn't have anything that automatic. And from that, since they didn't have that, as you said, they were searching. And by the time late fourth got around, like, nobody was really in rhythm. Like, Jason Tatum didn't shoot well for most of that game. Like, strong start to the first quarter. After that, the shots just weren't falling for him. Jaylen Brown, the mindset, kudos to him. He's maintained it this entire series. 9 of 19 from the field tonight. And especially in that fourth quarter, it was a lot of, I'm going to take Clay. I am going to take Draymond. And shout out to both of those guys. Draymond early in the fourth comes out of the game, then comes back in late and defends well. And Klay Thompson with Draymond off the floor, taking the Jaylen Brown matchup and more than holding his own. Like, that might have been the best stretch of defense we've seen from Klay in the series. Not that he's been awful or anything like that earlier, but he really, you felt his possession. And Boston tried to manipulate the spacing in the same way they did in game three. And it just didn't hit the same because the same creases weren't being open on the drive. And that's a testament to what Clay was able to do against Jaylen Brown. And again, you take that off, now it's a lot of Marcus Smart dribbling late. It's Derek White dribbling late. It's Al Horford trying to get something up late. Golden State is okay with that. Boston has shot makers talented enough to make that work. It just didn't tonight. And they can't get into this kind of mud. And that's a word we've used plenty during the postseason, but they have to be able to hit something to move Golden State. And if Golden State tightens the screws on ball, like, they have to go elsewhere. Just a quick point before I flip it back to you, because you did mention the off-ball usage for Jason Tatum. I didn't like Boston's spacing on that. Because they were running the same screen middle of the floor. You have, like, Marcus Smart on the left wing or something, and it's Jason Tatum taking a screen from the middle of the floor to catch it going middle. It felt like they were standing too close together. So, like, even if the screen doesn't hit, then you're not creating an advantage. And even if it does, you can pretty much help off and cut off a driving lane before Jason Tatum can even get going. Like, they're going to have to spread that out a little bit. That's just a nitpicky thing on my end.
Well, the idea is you are hopefully able to get Curry in a position where he's kind of dropping and you can curl and attack it that way. But, you know, that's nitpicky for me. Everyone's going to talk about Draymond not playing. Everyone's going to talk about the decision to put him on the bench. Who's going to talk about how that allowed Clay to guard Jaylen Brown and what that meant in that game?
This podcast.
Because that was the move. I thought Golden State had a lot of activity once they got there. Because that's kind of the fun part of Golden State's defense. Like, we talk about Draymond a lot. Well-deserved praise. But when you can get some of what he does from Clay on and off ball, from Wiggins on and off ball, you can kind of shift the matchups in a way that helps you. And that's where it got interesting. How did you feel about Austin falling for the bait during the Nemanja minutes? And we saw Dallas also fall for this bait. And it's not necessarily that he's not, how do I word this? I understand why you would try to attack that. But when that becomes the base of your offense during a couple different stretches, and you're not necessarily getting the success out of it, what have you gained?
Not much. And I feel you on that. Like, I, going back through those possessions, like you said, I understand why you attack that, because he was the worst defender on the floor at times. And to the earlier point, Boston was searching in the half court. They were trying to get those drives to pack a punch so they can get Golden State scrambling again, so they can get to the drive and kick game and generate some cleaner looks from three. But with Bielitsa, one, he just did a good job. Let's start there. He held his own in space. But just by virtue of who he is a big. And with the way that Golden State likes to help behind those isolations anyway, it's tougher to really space that in a way to where Bielitsa is a real liability, if that makes sense. Because of where they're attacking him and where Golden State is showing their help, like, there's only a certain way that you can beat him off the dribble anyway. And if you can't win that way, then you're defaulting to taking jump shots over him. And bad defender or not, 6'9 is 6'9. Jaylen Brown is 6'5, 6'6. Like, if Bielitsa doesn't have to worry about becoming a turnstile and he can just put his hand up, like, that's all you need him to do. And so Boston kept trying to hammer it home. They couldn't get the dribble penetration that they wanted. And now you're just getting more late clock shots or contested shots over him. And you can't have that kind of, again, you can't get in the muck like that if you're Boston.
No, yeah. I mean, anyone who is not necessarily the fastest of foot knows the game plan against a scorer. You're not getting by me, I'm going to contest your shot. And if you make it, cool. But you're also not getting by me. And the problem with Golden State is, if you do, there's help behind it. Like, that was the secret sauce to me, Golden State being able to reestablish some of that late help at the rim that they kind of lost in the previous game. I thought that was key. And now you take Boston's dribble penetration plays where they're trying to play out of the flow or create something and make that a battleground, a 50-50 type deal, as opposed to close to an automatic for them as it was in game three. It's a little different. It's a little different. And now you mix it in with Golden State not necessarily backing down from putting Curry in action, you know? And now maybe you're not spamming the same actions with Tatum as a screener as you were. Maybe your blend is off. And now you've got a battle. That's tough. That's a tough deal to deal with. Now, it's also tough when you forget that Kevon Looney on the wing is going to create an open look for Golden State. Like, I, at this point, I don't want, like,
I love how much that bothers you.
It irks me. I was sitting on the bench in the league. My phone's been dry for 6 years now, right? They were running post splits then. And y'all want to sit out here and tell me how a podcast gives you such valuable information about a series, and Golden State is literally running post splits with a big that they ran in 2014. Get out of here, man. I almost got mad. Sorry.
Almost. I see. The hashtag is Big Irk, I suppose. It's a step below Big Mad. On the precipice, but we couldn't get there just yet. While we're on the subject of bigs, you already touched on what you don't want the narrative to be in terms of the Draymond move. How did you feel about Draymond's game, period? Because honestly, I don't feel like he played that poorly. He didn't score. He had 2 points. He didn't bring you much as a scorer. if you just look at the box score, 9 rebounds, that's solid. 8 assists, also solid. 4 steals, also solid. Only 2 turnovers, you take that. Defensively, he had to toggle through a multitude of matchups, including Jaylen Brown. And he forced Jaylen Brown to knock down some incredibly tough shots. One I can think of right now is the late clock one in the 4th, I want to say, where Jaylen's fading to his left, double clutches and gets it to go with outstretched arms of Draymond. I want to say he got fouled on that one too. That might have been 3rd quarter. But like, that's what Draymond's being asked to do. I don't feel like, again, the scoring wasn't there for him, but I don't feel like he was afraid or anything of the sort. Like, I don't feel like he played a passive game at all. Like, he felt active offensively. One of the things you mentioned early in the watch party with Golden State making the lineup change that they did, like, is that a way to get Kevon Looney on Draymond? Does that open him up in pick and roll? Does that open up some short roll opportunities if Robert Williams plays higher? Like, I think that might be something Golden State pokes at a little bit more in game 5 we're projecting forward. Because I would imagine since they won, they probably tried the Otto Porter lineup again. But the first stint didn't go well. The second stint was a little bit better. But I don't know, like, where were you on Draymond on the court?
I didn't have the same feeling about it. I thought, I mean, he didn't have the impact you would necessarily want him to have. The thing that jumped off to me initially as I was watching that game, I thought, hey, maybe this is an opportunity with this lineup to try and trick Boston into putting Robert Williams on him. And maybe that will unlock him as a roller. They didn't necessarily get to that as much as I thought they would. And that's probably been like the surprising part of the series. They haven't been able to get to Draymond as a roller and put pressure on Boston that way. And so if that's off the table and Boston's going to help off him this way, what offensive impact do you expect him to have outside of making open shots? I mean, honestly, not judgmental. I would ask anyone, so outside of him taking the open threes that are there, what impact is he supposed to have? I thought there's plays where he's trying to swing and make a play based on teams helping off him. They haven't been able to unlock that either. Defensively, I thought, you know, he battled. It's a different series as far as his impact on and off ball because he's being moved around. Not just multiple matchups, but it's not like he's in just one spot. So it's a little bit harder to gauge his impact in the same way that we regularly do when he's battling Jaylen Brown on ball. He's switching other times. He's guarding Robert Williams and helping sometimes. It's not necessarily the same type of series where he can put his stamp on it. Like the Denver series or the Memphis series. It's just a little different. So with his skill set, with the way the series is going, you're going to see a different Draymond. Now, you would like to see him play with more force. You know, I thought he, early possession I think of off the top of my head, he got a rebound, dribbled like a bat out of hell. And I was like, all right, okay, Draymond's here today. Mm-hmm. But now he's got to find the gaps. He's got to find a way to have the dribble handoffs. He's got to find a way to have the swings into a screen and open things up against how Boston's playing against him. And if he can do that, now what do you have for your Golden State?
Got a lot more juice.
And so it's going to be a battle. But I'm not necessarily on the train of, oh, narrative, what a decision. I'm just not buying that. There's too much basketball that's going on for me. Draymond finished the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're literally talking about the decision to take Draymond off the court when Draymond's on the court. I don't know, man.
Yeah. Like, the run was important. Like, it was noteworthy. It was Golden State. I think during the stretch, Draymond was off the floor during the 4th. They outscored Boston 11-3. And so, obviously, you know that. They did go space here. I think Steph, Claypool, Andrew Wiggins, and Kevon Looney was the lineup. It's the lineup that we saw it in game 3. I was like, huh. And I pinpointed that in my thread. I was like, huh, this is interesting. I wonder if/when Golden State goes back to this. I didn't expect it to be like a quasi closing lineup for them. I already knew where the narrative was going to go there if they did just flat out close with it. Because if Draymond just becomes like the offense defense sub guy, like just from like a narrative perspective, we don't really do that on this podcast, but like just zooming out with how it would be viewed. Like if he becomes the offense defense sub, that's quite a shift from from what we are expected or what we are used to when it comes to Draymond Green. But like you said, like he did come back in, and when he came back in, he also made big plays. Like he was still flying around on defense, had a crucial offensive rebound that led to a kick, that led to a layup that helped ice the game. Draymond made plays tonight. It can be a little bit of everything. It can be, hey, can he knock down open shots because he needs to make those, while also recognizing he's still doing some good things as a screener. He does still make Boston think. Like, as much as they gap him because they don't worry about the shot, like you do still have to account for, hey, if he catches the ball while we're 10 feet off of him, he will flow into a handoff with someone else. And if we close out on that too tight, he can fake the handoff and get downhill and find someone else. Like these are things that Draymond has done in this series, in a series where he has received well due criticism. He has still made Boston think about things in the half court. And so it's still up to him to produce, but like it, let's not let it get the other way because it's fun to talk about, if that makes sense.
No, I mean, we can, these are all valid things. Criticisms about him are valid as far as the on-court impact. But let's talk about what he can do and what that means for the game as opposed to, you know, he can't play. Because it is true. I mean, if they're really going offense, defense with him, that's a different story. And I was laughing because I saw Stone Cold Steve Austin milk a GIF on Twitter in regards to Redacted.
I can't do this. No.
You wanted to record on Friday.
Oh, goodness. This, before this even gets off the rails, two things. One on this series and one general NBA note before we get out of here. One, who are you feeling better as heading into game five, Golden State or Boston?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would probably say Golden State just because you did get the win you needed to get and you're going back home. And all you have to do is take care of business at home. Now, and if I'm Golden State, I probably look at this game and I think, hey, we probably could have played a lot better.
Steph said the same.
We probably left some things on the table offensively. We could have got made more shots, could have created more opportunities for each other. We kind of rode Steph in this one. Let's reset and see if we can defend better and back home, maybe get into more of a flow. From Boston, I don't know how bad I feel. Opportunity was there. Don't get me wrong. But if I'm Boston, I know I'm looking and saying we left some things on the table. Offensively, we could have hit more pressure points. Defensively, we could have been more active. And so if you're Boston, you're saying, hey, if we tighten up X, Y, and Z, we know what we can do against this team. And so I feel, again, this series feels like both teams are confident in what they can do. It's just a matter of who's going to do it on that night. Who are you leaning towards?
I probably lean Boston. Again, the loss stings, and you had a chance to put a real stranglehold on the series. But like through four games, like you kind of know what you're doing defensively, and you know what the margin for error is within what you're trying to accomplish on defense. And again, 43, it took 43 from Steph, and it took the offense being this. And Golden State obviously had a hand to play in that. But if you're just looking at Boston, like, okay, Steph had to be superhuman. And we still didn't really break what we did. And this was a night Jason Tatum went, if I can do quick math, 4-15 from 2 in this one. Didn't get to the line as often. Like there's at least a little bit of low-hanging fruit. Again, defensively, the drop can be played a step or two higher sometimes. If you can pull out some random clips of the step pick and rolls from game 4. Like some can be played a little bit higher. But there was a play late in the fourth where you had Marcus Smart kind of fighting for his life. It was the play that Steph ended up getting the floater after taking on Rob Williams. Like, Marcus Smart just trips. Like, you can take a play like that away. But I feel like there's enough defensively where Boston was like, okay, we can do this better. And then offensively, it, again, felt like they completely lost the plot for most of the second half. And they were still right there. And so if I'm Boston, like, we've already proven that we can win on the road. We have the defense to really shrink the margin for error for Golden State. Like, I think Boston should feel pretty solid right now. And for the general question, I guess just going general NBA news real quick. Kenny Atkinson hired as the head coach of the Charlotte Hornets. How are you feeling about that fit?
It's a good spot for Kenny Atkinson. Good to see him getting back in the head chair. If you look at what he brings to the table and how he can develop and help a young team, what he can bring offensively to that kind of team, what he did in Brooklyn, as far as getting that team to compete on a nightly basis, getting that team to execute offensively, playing with pace, playing with tempo, that vibes what we've seen from Charlotte. The key is going to be, can he bring the defense? And I'm assuming that's what he sold them on as well. I have this offensive acumen, but I also can do this defensively. That's going to be the big one. Can you get them to buckle down and become a consistent defensive team? Not a force or anything like that, but just a team that can come out every night, get stops, execute offensively, play up and down. I think he can manage that young core. Now, the question that popped in my head was, is that going to elevate them? Not to say that he can't, but you're at a time period where, yeah, you have a young core, but you got to make some decisions here shortly. So is this a move that you would have wished to have made maybe 2 years ago? Or, you know, what team are you going to be handing him? But I like the move. Yeah, I think it's a good fit based on what he's done in the past and based on what they have in the cupboard. But I like it. What do you think?
I like it as well. As we were kind of getting down to the finalists, and it was, I think, him and Mike D'Antoni. I think I even tweeted out, like, I understand the allure of Mike D'Antoni, obviously a very accomplished head coach, and the dreams of him and LaMelo Ball together. It's enough to excite any basketball fan. But I'm with you. Like, I look back to what kind of, not just development system that he built in Brooklyn, but also just the overall culture that he helped build there. And the level of buy-in that he got from a lot of younger players that were trying to establish themselves as well. And that can be an interesting mix to try to navigate. Like, these are a lot of guys, I think, to, you know, Caris LeVert is the easy one, where it's like very talented dude that only failed because of the injury woes. And what he was able to do with Brooklyn, take them to the playoffs with Caris LeVert, is like a lead option on that offense. And so just, I trust the background with Kenny Atkinson. And I trust that he will be able to not only help put these young minds in position, better position to win, but I think he can cultivate the kind of relationships that can improve the overall, like, feeling around that team. And that's just kind of where I'm at. Like, I like it. I will zoom out and say, I guess to answer your other question, like, does it elevate it? The ceiling doesn't raise too much until Charlotte, and we're talking above Kenny Atkinson, until they make a commitment to really rounding out this roster defensively, the ceiling is only going to be so high. Like, that has to be addressed no matter who the head coach is. But I do like the Atkinson fit. Like, I do think he's going to help this team improve. But how much is going to depend on what the actual roster construction is. And I guess they're not going to make that joke. But it's really going to depend on what the roster construction is.
Nah, shoot your shot. Let's go.
I was just going to say, it's going to depend on the roster construction and the choice of beverage. But
wow. Okay. All right. Taking us on a bridge to nowhere.
There we go. Thank you for listening.
1,000 miles.
Woo! Basketball. Woo!
Great song. Great song from Vanessa Carlton.
There we go.
I had one final question for you.
What's up?
Is Draymond Green the Wes Welker of the NBA?
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. If you have not joined the Dunker Spot community yet on Twitter and you have the capability to do so, I know they're still rolling out that feature on the app. Please join because you are missing out on some very fun stuff happening in there. But aside from that, thank you for listening. We will catch y'all later.
Bye.